Hey Jose, welcome to Trust Builders. I am so excited that you're here because you and I had a really long history and I'm so excited to be tapping into your knowledge today.
Oh, my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Hannah.
Awesome. So I want to start with where you really are helping businesses, right? You are specializing on getting B2B, so business to business businesses. Say that three times fast.
Right.
Off that revenue plateau, what is a revenue plateau? How do you get there? And how do you know you're on one?
Sure. Sure. So some folks in your audience might be in the technology world. And in those worlds, like you build a technology startup with the idea that we're going to go from a million to five to 10 to 20, then Google buys us. That's the master plan. But for a lot of B2B companies, that are like just in the regular industry, right? They make things or they make parts that go into cars and they've been around for 30, 40 years. That's the backbone of every economy, right? So it's not the high flying stuff that you read about, the fast companies. Those are nice and exciting, but most B2B companies that are privately held range between usually in US dollars, between $5 and $25 million before they get exited to a PE firm or before they get turned over and so on, right? So that's the kind of the range we play in, that size company. It's a good business. So what happens is they got from whatever they started, whether it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or their father's father started, doesn't matter. But they see themselves as a $10 million company or a $12 million mm-hmm. company. And then I ask them the question, how long have you been there? And if it's more than 2 or 3 years, you really are on a plateau. It's like a mountain climb and you just settle there. And then the key question to ask an owner always is, are you happy there, right? Because you own it, right? So like you say, yeah, I get to golf on Wednesdays, everything's good. I said, yeah, but are your competitors happy to leave you there? And that's a different story. And the reality is plateaus are not permanent. They're more like shaky ice if you use the Mount Everest climb metaphor, right? So all of a sudden you go from, they tell me, well, we're a $12 million company. I said, really, what did you do last year? And they said, well, last year was different. It was like 10. How about the year before? That was like 11. I said, so it seems the plateau is sliding down, right? So those are signs of plateauism, is that you haven't seen the growth going forward. And in fact, it's starting to slide back the other way because competition doesn't let you sit still. You have to be looking to grow something. So, but I really want to find the owner who desires that. Sometimes you have an owner that's at the end of their professional life and what they really need to do is exit. The problem is they start thinking about that too late and the quality of revenues and the trajectory starts sliding downward. And that really impacts valuation. It makes mm-hmm. it a less viable exit. So the very thing they're trying to get to, their inattention to growth for the last 3 or 4 years actually will cost them at the closing table because they won't be able to get maximum value. So we say buyers want to buy a company that's on the upswing. Doesn't mean you have to be the next Facebook or the next tech giant. It just means you're moving in a growth trajectory that they can believe in. And say, okay, if we buy this business, if we're a PE firm, we buy this business, we see how we can take it from 12 to 25. Because they'll put capital in, they'll put management in, they'll do all those type of things. So plateau is a feeling of stuck. And here's where it really shows up more, if I may, Anna, just mm-hmm. some of the emotional layers of it, right? The owner that I work best with is the one that's self-aware. We've hit, yeah, that plateau language resonates. That's what I feel like I've been at. And I've been throwing money at. I've been working with a marketing agency. I've done SEO. I even did some PR. We're doing trade shows. In fact, I just hired a second sales rep because they're smaller companies. They don't have teams of 22 sales reps, right? I'm trying these things and nothing's moving the needle. That's the world that I live in, is that person who's frustrated. They said, I'm trying. I'm stepping on the accelerator, but we're not going any faster. And that's really the sweet spot for what we focus on. That's what being stuck on a plateau feels, and we help people break through that plateau.
Yeah, that's a really frustrating place to be stuck at. It reminds me of someone trying to lose weight, and you've done every single thing, right? You've done this, that, here, and there. It's that, oh, I'm trying everything I can, but you're not getting anywhere. So that is a really cool way to describe it. But if you flip that now on its head, you really help them to get unstuck. But the other or the more important part of your value proposition of your company is to actually grow it on purpose. You have a podcast called Business Growth on Purpose. The tagline of your company is Business Growth on Purpose. So how do you, it's quite a little bit of a general statement. Obviously, everyone wants to grow their, even if they don't do it, but we feel like we are growing our business on purpose. What do you do differently that will help them to actually change that trajectory?
Yeah, so there's two things, especially again, the kind of company I described tends to be a little bit boring backbone companies, right? They're not super excited. Right. They make handles, but somebody has to make a million handles for all the things that need handles. That's the we don't live fully in cyberspace yet, like just in a mental construct. We live with physical things. Things still have to be made. And that could also be professional services and so on. But so what happens is you're stuck. There's a couple of things. The first thing to do, and the first thing we help people do is let's diagnose like a CAT scan. Why are you stuck? Because if you are, in fact, you put a new website up, you're doing these things, you're spending this money, then maybe it's something more fundamental. It could be that you've let that boring backbone company become a pure commodity. You just haven't, you stopped differentiating. And just saying things like quality, trustworthy, excellent customer service. Every single company that I talk to will tell me those are things that set them apart. And I say, how's it possible you're all set apart by the same things? By definition, you're not being set apart. You're all the same because that becomes table stakes. So we try to find out fundamentally, and we usually do this like in a one-day executive workshop where we really dig in with some a little bit of pre-work and pre-reading, but the whole idea is to dig in diagnostically what actually is holding back your growth. And it might not be your marketing. It might not be your sales process. It could be your customer success process. It could be your production. I work with a company that they were always late on delivery, always. They did great work. People loved the work, but it was always late. They could never be on time. And the reason was, if somebody called them for a new order, they would prioritize the new order and push back the old orders because they were hungry for the business. Well, it turns out that's not a good business practice, all right? Because what they were afraid of is, if I tell people it's going to take 4 weeks to get your order, I won't get the order. Turns out, no one could get the order done in less than 4 weeks. So you actually didn't lose the orders when you tell people the truth. And they added up all the days late for all their orders, and they put it up on the board. And they started out with 1,100 days late for everything that was in the queue. Now, it doesn't mean any one thing was 1,100 days late, but it was a lot of orders. They got that down. It took them about 18 months, but they got it to zero. So they are now on time. Now, that wasn't a new marketing tactic. That wasn't better sales tactic. That wasn't better customer success. That was just core, fundamental to doing things right. So first thing's diagnostic. Why are you not growing? The second thing, and it's tightly related, is almost always going to be work around, and appropriate for a company named Value Prop, around their value proposition. What sets you apart in your market? Why should somebody choose you over your competitor? If you're always in the same three bids, you're going to win 33% of the business. How do you make that 40%? And that's the thing. You don't need to make it 100%. If you get 40%, we used to get 33%. That's real growth. You're going to see it. And then you can reinvest some of that growth into other things that make you even more attractive. But really finding that nugget of what is it that really sets you apart. And then sometimes what happens is when we do that process, we find out there's really nothing that sets you apart. So then the second part of that is, okay, what could we do that would make us in a way that's meaningful to our best customers? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they raise their hand and say, we're not quite sure who our best customers are. So let's get to that. You know, let's figure out who should you really be serving? Because some of these businesses have been around for a long time. They have long client lists, but you have to apply the 80-20 rule, right? Like just basically, okay, where's the business really coming from? And a question I love to ask customers or people I work with is, if you could clone a customer, who would you clone?
Yeah.
And why? Let's get to the why. And then now we have attributes we can work with. So that's the prop, diagnostic, value prop. And then some of the other stuff is blocking and tackling. Maybe they are making some bad decisions on some of the marketing, mm-hmm, and sales and stuff. But we really want to start with a strong core. And we're not a marketing agency, so we don't compete with them. So if they have a marketing agency, I said, they're good people. They actually know what they're doing, but you're not giving them the right direction. And that's the other thing. You need to give your third-party resources. You have to have a vision for what you want to do to give them good direction. If you expect a marketing agency that's working on 72 other clients to figure out your grand strategy for you, and you're a small company, you may be able to do that if you're a Fortune 500 hiring Ogilvy to do your strategy or whatever, Deloitte or something. But in small business, you're never going to get that kind of energy. You have to supply it.
Yeah. And a lot of times, I remember one conversation once with a client of mine, and I asked that question of, who are you solving that problem for, and what is the problem that you're solving? And he said, it's a software vendor. He said, oh, we can do anything for anyone. That's like the worst value proposition you can possibly have. But picking up on something else that you just mentioned there with your diagnostics, I remember that's how we met, right? Like, you came into the team that I worked in with SAP, mm-hmm. and you helped us really distinguish. And I remember it was a painful couple of days because we really dug super, super deep into what makes us different, how are we different from our competition, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to go a little bit deeper on that value proposition. Mm-hmm. Why is it so crucial to get that part?
I look at it this way, right? It's the, you could have this incredibly good looking sports car, wonderful tires, a great driver, your competition racer. At the end of the day, you need an engine, mm-hmm. that can crank. Your value proposition is the engine, because it is the true truth of what you do that means anything in the world. Now, that sounds a little esoteric, right? So let's break it down to brass tacks. We always want to answer one key question. This is like the question, right? Why should anyone buy X from you at Y price? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the anyone forces you to think about your target. X, buy X from you is, okay, what is it we're really telling the world we do, right? Yep. From you, why are you best qualified to offer X? Maybe other companies offer X. And at Y price, that means you're getting the value return that you're looking for. Most owners cannot answer that question because they struggle with all four of those points. So how are you going to develop web copy, marketing brochures, a trade show presence, a sales process that's repeatable? How can you do any of that if you don't have the answer to that essential question? And it gets skipped over because people go, oh, no, we know. And I've been with leadership teams. I said, okay, write it down, everybody, and then read it out. And they're all different. I said, okay, so we know you don't know. And now, if you're the CEO owner, maybe your index card is the right one. You win, right? Because you own the place and you run the show. But I challenge you to listen carefully, because there's a reason why your other teammates, people who maybe work for you, think it's something else than you thought it was. So it's not that they're idiots. If you didn't hire idiots, they're probably pretty smart people and know what they're doing, but they're seeing a dimension of the world. So that's the process of how do you bring that together to something tight? And by the way, Hannah, and it always kills me when people say, oh, you mean a tagline? I said, no, a tagline is just one manifestation of your value proposition. The value proposition is the truth. A tagline, a whole brochure, a one-hour video, those are all just ways you express that truth so people understand what it is. But you got to understand the truth internally first before you can start expressing it. And what people do is they hire these people to say, no, tell our story, but we don't have our story straight. So that's why it's the engine. All the other things aren't going to work well unless it's the right engine connected correctly to everything. And that's why we focus on that as a primary focus to drive growth. And that's the on purpose part. It's with great intentionality. You're not just saying Larry's job. If you're an owner listening to this podcast, don't let it be Larry's job. It's your job. You're the owner. You're the one that when you exit, if it's now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and you're hoping to get $10 million at the closing table, these decisions determine whether that ever happens or not.
So that was exactly my next question, actually. You said it's not Larry's job. Let's say Larry might be in marketing or Larry might be in sales. Right. A lot of owners that I talk to in my business coaching, they have that feeling of that's just, and you just alluded to that, that it being the core truth and everything else is just a marketing message based on that core truth. But a lot of owners or executive management feel like it's just the job of marketing to define that value proposition. You and I know that you have to, as a business leader, you have to define that core mission, your North Star, and your value proposition has to align with that. But why is it so crucial that the management or the owner are not only a key part of defining this, but actually really 100% are behind that and see that it's not just marketing's job to define some fluffy messaging?
So I'll answer this question in two parts. One is that I'll answer practically, then strategically. Practically, it's this. If you're an owner of a $10 million company and you're not enjoying software margins, okay, let's say you're making handles or something like that. So margins are not that, but they're this. You're spending money on all of these things. Like you're already investing dollars in human capital. If you had two BD people and a marketing coordinator, right there, you're into it. Easily $400,000 on a $10 million business, that's real money, right? So why wouldn't you want to, it'd be like saying, I'm going to hire a builder to build me a house. Any house will do. Really? I think you would actually take great interest, or you say, I'll hire an architect. So an architect will do a good design, better than the builder would design. Okay, great. Any design will do. Really? Like you're going to live in that. You're going to live in that house for years. You're going to invest. It represents probably one of your biggest investments of your life. And maybe the architect understands your wants and needs. My wife, what she wants, where she wants different things to be, the flow of the house, all that stuff. Maybe I get lucky. That's not on purpose. On purpose is, no, I'm going to collaborate with the architect. Now, the architect knows things and may suggest things. So if I have a marketing director or VP of marketing, sure, I want them to talk intelligently about what the implications of marketing this way or that way would be and so on. But I want to own our core truth because I want to make sure everybody, I don't want just me as the owner to know that. I want every last person on my team to know why we're important to the customers we're important to. We're not going to be important to everybody, not equally important for the same reasons, but the ones we really want so that everybody's tuned into that. That brings us all in alignment, all that, and I know this sounds a little metaphysical, but all that energy is going in the same direction. Let's be practical. It means that if we say our differentiator is above and beyond customer service, let's say really above and beyond, we define what that means. You end up like when Tom Peters wrote In Search of Excellence in 1980, and he talked about Nordstrom's. They're still good, but they were then exceptional. Where the story is somebody brought a tire in to return it because they weren't happy with the tire. Nordstrom doesn't sell tires, but they took the return. That's above and beyond, all right? That's when, so you have to decide, are we ready to do that? Are we ready to actually say to somebody who says, I need that part tomorrow, and our policy says we have to charge extra for shipping this and that, or is our answer, you'll have it tomorrow. We'll figure it out later. We'll figure out the cost and stuff later. They just want production to go back up and they need that part. That has to start from the top. It's a leadership issue. It's not a marketing issue. Marketing has to follow leadership. If you don't give marketing good leading, you don't tell them what you want done, they will do adequate things and you'll find yourself stuck on that plateau. That's the whole point. Even if they're very talented marketers, it doesn't matter. They have to know, what is your heartbeat? What are you willing to sacrifice for? What are you willing to put capital into? What are you willing to hire for? What are you willing to stand behind? How would they know that unless you're giving that direction? And they can't guess that. So again, it's the house is a good metaphor of that. Like you have to be involved. Yes, the technical drawings, you're not going to draw it and give it to builders. You want architects to render that properly, right? Of course. But you have to give that vision, direction, and so on. That passion has to come from you. And even if you sell a very commodity category, you're going to find something that you feel, gosh darn it, we do this better than anybody. Then let that resonate so that if I talk to somebody on your shop floor, say, what do you do better than anything? Oh, we're the best at, right? And boom, I'm working with a client now that does it in the commodity category. And one of the things they do is it's a type of artwork that gets used in industrial uses. And their promise is if you give them finished artwork to reproduce by 2 o'clock, they will put it on the UPS truck by the end of the day every time. Wow. Right. They need a 3-hour window. They have the and they've aligned their entire production line and their personnel to know that's their promise. That's the brand promise. Now, there are some exceptions for some crazy designs that and they would communicate that. But for most things that are pretty standard designs in the category they support, bang, that thing goes out that day. And they're excellent at doing that. And they've committed to doing that. And that's what their customers know they can count on. So it really comes down to what can your customers know they can count on. And they're growing as a result. So that's just an example.
Yeah, it's a great analogy and great example. I don't know if you've heard of Donald Miller, but his explanation or his metaphor of the core vision and your mission, and that related, obviously, your value proposition, is the cockpit of an airplane. And your leadership has to be manning that cockpit or you will not know where to go. Right. The whole rest of your marketing and sales being the two wings and the whole, no one will know where that plane is going to go unless you define that. So thank you for that. Yeah. In terms of, I just want to go to your book for a second. You wrote the book Value Prop, and I have a quite old version of it. You know, you've just updated it, but you mentioned the three I's.
Yeah.
What are the three I's that make up a really good value proposition? And then I want to go to an example.
Sure. It's a test, right? So it's a basically saying, if we think people really see us as different, we say the differences that matter most. And there's three I's, and they're not all going to be like on a scale of 1 to 10, 10s, right? That's a perfect value proposition. You have a 30, right? You know, 10, 10, and 10. But the first thing is that it's innovative, that you're bringing something new to your target market that they haven't seen before. Okay, something new. That could be a service level that they haven't seen. Again, like in the example I gave about the artwork that got turned around in 3 hours, same day. In that industry, that was new. Nobody was doing that quite that with that. People promise fast turnaround, but not like a precise guarantee. So that's the first I, is it innovative? Are you bringing something new? And let me just dig in on that just a little bit. It has to be new to your target market. It may not be new on the planet Earth. The type of ductwork that was used in Europe for the last 15 years. It was never in North America because it didn't meet code. In code, they were doing tin ductwork for like air conditioning systems and so on. But Canada approved it. So they started importing this product into the Canadian market. Well, to the Canadian market, this is brand new. So I told them, I said, it's brand new. I said, the fact that other parts of the world have seen it for 15 or 20 years is irrelevant because in this market, it's new to this market. So innovation is... Yes, there are some things that are brand, like the first time you saw an iPhone, a stateless, keyless device that would have all information on the planet Earth in your pocket. But that's a burden for innovation and that's what my problem with some of the literature on innovation. They want you to reinvent entire industries and so on. You're like a $10 million handle manufacturer. You're not reinventing the entire world. You're just not. You don't have the capital depth, personnel depth, the reach. But you can still innovate for your target market in ways that are meaningful to them. That's the first thing. Second thing is indispensable, that your innovation is something that will benefit them over time. I use the example that I'm the business strategist that always shows up in a pink jumpsuit, right? That's innovative. No one's seen it before, but it's not that useful. So that's the other thing with innovation. It has to be an innovation that's meaningful to your customer that they would care about. And indispensability says they want it for a long period of time. So in the book, I wrote about the original iPod, which is now like an ancient development by today's standards, but it's still a great example of this exact thing, that it basically said all my music in my pocket 24/7. That was mind-blowing at the time. And that would never not be useful for somebody who loves music. So that became indispensable. I couldn't see not having it. Today, our smartphones are indispensable. No one even goes to breakfast without their phone with them. And the last one is inspirational. So that says the first thing is new, net new, what I call net new, net useful is another way of looking at indispensable. And the last one is a little bit net wow. Add some panache, add some flavoring to what you do in a way that makes people a little bit excited about it. It's not just the words around it, but maybe the way you offer the service. Just figure out ways to wow your customer if you can, right? To the degree you can. In industrial categories, it's not a touchy-feely kind of thing, so you're not going to go there. But you will find ways to just really impress them with something that you've done. It could be you make a part a certain way and the finish is cleaner than any of your competitors. So the inspirational part might be, I might put a label around the steel bar that I finished cleaner than my competitors, and I call it clean cut. And they have to, it's just a little label that says this was clean cut. I re-emphasize to them that this is a bit wow. I said, wow, that is a clean cut. They'll notice it and they'll start wanting, we want all our steel bars with the clean cut, because otherwise we have to do the work in-house. That's the point. And you can start hitting those three eyes. That's one way of looking at your value proposition and say, am I bringing something new to my target market? Is what I do useful over time? And do we do it in a way that's a little bit exciting for somebody in the trade? Somebody outside of the trade say, that's boring. My youngest son is going to study mathematical physics, right? So it's a really arcane segment of fit. Yeah, so he's going to be going on that path. He's doing very well with that. So there's things that he geeks out about. Like, he said, Dad, let me show you this video and everything. And I'm like, okay, it's interesting as a layperson, but he's like excited about it. So always think about what would excite my target audience in the way we deliver things. If you can figure out those three I's to the greatest degree possible, you will start standing apart from your competitors, even a little bit. And that's sometimes all you need. We talked about a three bid, instead of winning 33%, winning 40%, you are crushing your competitors now. And you're probably enjoying better margins, more repeat business, more cost. It has a lot of benefits downstream to your business health.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, it makes sense that it has to be relevant and it has to be some sort of aha, wow factor. But the is it innovative might be a little hard for some people in terms of, is it really me, like as a company, that has to be innovative to the other 100 competitors in the market? Like that I can see is something that a lot of people would struggle with.
Sure. So one of the things, like, for example, in the software world, right, the whole technology space, is that the relative barrier to entry is relatively low in some entry point kind of software tools and stuff. When you get into full suites and stuff, you do need teams of developers and it becomes very expensive. And expensive to maintain. So what happens is people get an idea for a category, and all of a sudden you have, especially now it's a global market, you have 14 competitors that showed up yesterday, right? So the innovation may be the category. That's what you're alluding to, right? No one's solved this problem. Now everybody's solving this problem. But the example I like to use is in the recent Olympics, Usain Bolt, right? Who has the best last name of any athlete ever, right? Because it's totally appropriate. And it's actually his real name, right? So it's great. So he consistently, when he was competing regularly, he won every race, literally like almost unparalleled. But if you analyze his races, he was racing against the fastest humans the world has ever seen. He just was the fastest of the fastest humans by a little bit. But what's interesting about that is when you win by a little bit, they still give you the entire gold medal. They don't, you only won this much. No, you get the whole gold medal and the other guys get silver and bronze. That's what happens. It's the same thing here. If you're in a new category with 14 competitors, you have to work at finding some edge. Otherwise, somebody in those 14 will find the edge. And that's why there's Facebook wins. And oh my goodness, I just went blank on the other big one that was at the time that looked like it was a social media platform.
MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace disappears, right? There you go. It actually left my brain.
Yeah.
So little distinctions make a big difference. And the other thing too is often in technology companies, what I found, because I come from the technology space, obviously we met in that space primarily. What I found is that there's a tendency in the development side, the creation side, to say, we just got to add more features. That's what will set us apart. But I've seen examples. In fact, a great example, it's a little bit old, but it's still a great example, is Basecamp. Jason Fried, right? He started Basecamp, kept it private, became like a $50 million a year business, very profitable. And it never matched all the features of everyone else. But what he did do different than all the other project managers, and now you have Asana and you have other bigger tools. But at the time, Basecamp, when it really blew up, was because it was simpler. Yep. He aimed at simplicity. And so in the technology space, people think, let's layer in more stuff. Sometimes the market's just saying, no, just give me the shortest distance between two points. That, so there's always, I believe, I'm just like an optimist in this, I believe there's always a way to think about something you can do that will be different in a meaningful way to your customers relative to your competition. So being just in a new, fresh category is not enough, because you're being crowded, you're joined, there's 14 other companies joined the boat with you to that new destination. So, okay, there are 14 that will go in that same direction. How are you going to get there?
Yep. All right. Now, I'm going to be really brave.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you to have a look at my value proposition.
Okay.
On my website right now. I know it's never going to be done, and I know I've struggled with it a lot. That's my hardest thing that I'm ever doing, is writing my own value proposition. Absolutely. About myself.
Amen, sister. Same boat. Yeah, absolutely. Same, because you're too close to it. And that's one of the arguments for why you bring value to your clients. Why
it's and just, you to yours. Person. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me know when you're going to share a screen here so I can take a look, or how do you want to do this?
Sure, I can. I've not done that before on this video version, but I can.
Okay. So right up front, a couple of things, right? Again, I'm not going to comment on the aesthetic. It's nice aesthetically. It looks like contemporary professional website, all of that. My eye goes right to, they ask you answer on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's such a different, it doesn't look like a standard thing. So that the only challenge there is, if you want to promote you, and I know you use the ask you answer methodology as part of your, what you offer, that's good. But right, my eye's going to go there. Then it says, then let me get to your headline, right? Get endless customers in the age of AI. That's a big promise. And then becoming the most trusted brand in your industry is the key to gaining endless customers. Okay, so you're aiming at the trust issue.
Yes.
Not the most known brand or the most different brand. You're aiming at the trust dimension. So right away, you want to attract people who already believe that the key is trust in their branding. Not everybody believes that. Some people believe it doesn't matter that they trust, because we offer, if your house is on fire and I'm selling you water, you're not asking where the water came from, right? You're just happy to get the water. So the only thing I would say, looking at this and, you know, and I'm just looking at it right away, I like the promise. The only issue with, I always have with really big promises, and there's literature that says you should go with big or go home, is there's a mental process in every human's mind of, really? There's always like, really? Endless? You know what I mean? That's the only issue I have, is where something strains credulity just in terms of people who don't know you, right? If I know you, I might believe this, but if I don't know you and I'm just encountering this site, I'm saying, really? But that's good. So our sales, marketing, executive leadership, coaching, and training. Okay, so now you're telling me what you do. Executive leadership, coaching, and training based on a proven framework will help you achieve this. Okay, so that's what you do. And you're telling me, so one of the things, I like challenge statements too. Just think about this. And this may be a little bit outside the scope. Like, I'm not here to copyright your good copyright. But thinking of the problem state the other way, which is AI making it hard to reach your ideal customer. So that's the problem. Do people feel that pain? And that's a little different thought. The age of AI and becoming the most trusted brand are two different thoughts. And I'm always a little concerned at this stage on your website of having two different lanes.
Yeah.
Is the problem AI causes it hard? Is it hard to get customers? Is the problem being seen as trusted? So for example, you might go with something like how becoming the most trusted brand in your industry will lead to a steady flow of customers. That's a little too long, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
Right away, that's what we help And then I would say we help what kind of business. That's how we help early stage technology companies. I'm not saying that I'm not talking more at you, but if that were your focus through our executive leadership and so on and so forth, that's a slightly different thought. So a lot of feels here as I look at this, because some good ideas here. I'm just concerned. Here's my thought on this, and I'm guilty of this totally, because you almost can't help it. I've developed a motto that every use of the word "and" cuts the value of the statement by 50%. So when people say we do this and this, instead of making it stronger, by the time you're at the end of the statement, it actually became like whatever the math is, 25% as powerful as it should be. So I'd ask you this question, Hannah, right? If I really hot seat and you're very, I think it's credible to your credit that you're very transparent here with your own story, and I love it. But let me ask you this question. What's the one thing that you think, if I were to ask all the customers you've helped over the years, and they said, Hannah really helped us with, or yeah, if you have this problem, the person you must talk to is Hannah. What would be that issue, problem, or superpower people would credit you with?
I think the one thing that most people would say, and this is a bit like a weird thing, is I can always trust that Hannah would tell me if I have spinach in my teeth before I go on stage. Okay. Like, I'm always like the honest, I want you to succeed and I want you to get there, and I will be the person who will tell you, even if it's awkward, I will be that one that tells you, holds up the mirror, and let's make it better.
Okay. So that I think is a little bit further down the stack.
Yeah.
It's foundational, because it doesn't help me if I don't know you to know why should I to know that.
Yeah. I think you got to a very key issue here, if I just may make that injection here. I'm straddling between a very awkward spot in my career, right? The book They Ask You Answer is going to be renamed into Endless Customers in October.
Okay.
And no one, I truly, and that's why I'm like hosting the podcast Trust Builders, I truly 100% believe that trust is the only thing it comes down to in growing your business at the end of the day. Everything comes down to trust in the end of the day. But a lot of people, and you alluded to that, they know that intuitively, but they would never see that as the key problem. They would be like, yeah, of course, it's so obvious that it doesn't become something that people need to think or don't think of that they need to invest in. So becoming the most trusted brand in your industry, I 100% believe that's what gets you there. But no one is going to read that and be like, oh, I need to invest in trust, because it doesn't translate. It's not, oh, I need to do SEO. It's not performance marketing. It's not the thing that gets me there or something I can relate to. It's so foreign. Yeah, of course I have to do trust things, but that's ultimately what I help people to do.
There's two thoughts I have right away on that, which I think could be helpful here. One is a colleague from this area who I've known for years. His name is Chris Malone. He wrote a book a couple of years back called The Human Brand. He runs a consulting firm, works mostly with Fortune 500s. But what was interesting in The Human Brand, he talked about trust specifically. And I want to call it out for you here, because I think it might be helpful. He said, trust, if you figure classic XY axes, right? So the two things you want to maximize is trust is ultimately about understanding or believing in the other party's intentions and the other party's capabilities. So I need brain surgery. My wife loves me. We've been married over 35 years. And she said, I'll do the brain surgery. I trust her intentions, but not her capability, right? Or I go to a doctor, and the doctor, let's take the opposite scenario, and he treats me disdainfully, he's nasty to me, and so on. I may trust, he has all the diplomas that say he has the capabilities, but I probably will look for another doctor that also matches that with good intentions. That I want you to survive the brain surgery, right? I want to hear the words, whether he can guarantee it or not. So trust in those two dimensions. The word trust has a soft, squishy component to it that most people can easily dismiss. So how communicating your intentions and capabilities will increase your prospect's trust. Something like that is just think about that a little bit. Make the word trust have some more grittiness to it so that people can relate to it in business speak, right? A little bit more. It's still human, but a little bit more. Oh, that's not soft, squishy. This is not another vision day thing. This is actually a way to drive business. And the ask you answer says, you build trust in part, as I understand the methodology, and I've actually interviewed Marcus Sheridan, great guy, brilliant, is that a lot of times people feel trust increases the more their questions can be answered completely, right? If I ask you a question and you go, I don't know, you know, we'll see. Like I was buying something and I said, will you be here on Tuesday? I said, we'll try. That is not what I want to hear. I don't want to hear we'll try. I want to hear you're going to be here. Or tell me when you're going to be here and be precise about it. So it's that kind of thing I think helps that. But look, you're going to have to, and you know this, you're going to tease this out a number of different ways. You're going to try it out in content. You're going to try it out in talks. And also on something that maybe surprises you is going to resonate with an audience. And you're going to test it again. You say, oh, I got it. But I do think the word trust needs to be unpacked just a little bit to feel like solid planks as opposed to something. Of course, they trust us because we do what we say. I actually had a client, that was their tagline. We do what we say. And I said, that doesn't mean, I don't know what that means. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Awesome. Thank you for that insight on the spot here. I'm going to put you on the spot two more times because we have two closing segments. And the first is a short 2-minute rant on a topic of your choice. Can you think of something?
Yeah. I'm thinking, alluding to a little bit what we've been talking about, but I would say it this way. If I were to title this 2-minute rant, and I'm going into it right now, so you watch time and you just put your hand up, I'll stop, all right? But it's, you're not that different. I often, when I meet with a new client, they say, our business is very different than any other you've worked on. And it takes a long time to learn the business. And they often think that they hire like a salesperson, and often they're a small company, so they don't have a lot of sales bandwidth. Oh, it's going to take them years to learn the industry. And I'm thinking, dude, I've been here for a day and I already know enough to sell your business, to sell for you. Not as well as I could if I was doing this full time. But my point is, there's a few levers that are there. So people think they're much more different than they are. And they don't pay attention to being different in ways that are meaningful to customers, right? So right away, they think their industry is different. What they do is different. It always comes down to, in most cases, and I really do believe this, that you have to be clear on what you do that benefits somebody. So clarify that. There's going to be an order process, right? So somehow, how do people do business with you? But by the way, that's not even as clear as people think it is. So you're not that different means that you're struggling on some basic things that everybody struggles with. So make it easier. That's one. The other related kind of first cousin to you're not that different. Your customer service is not nearly as good as you think it is. All small businesses think their customer service is what sets them apart. It rarely is. I'll tell people, have you dialed your own 800 number? What is that experience like? No, I don't dial my 800 number because I have everybody's cell phone. I said, your customers don't. They dial the 800 and dial 1 for this, dial 2 for this, dial 4 for 7. Dial, at some point, just don't want another one of those. Just can a human answer the phone? So you think the things that make you different aren't really the things that matter to customers because you haven't looked at it, again, not overusing it a little bit, but on purpose. Like just really be intentional about what is going to set you apart. And don't count on the fact that people know us for all this time. We've been in business 47 years. Yeah, 47 years. The last 7, you've been on the plateau and actually you've shrunk. So that's not, and adjusted for inflation, you've really shrunk. You're not. So I always look at number of orders, average size of orders, margin contribution percentage, a couple of key metrics that say, are you really growing the way you think you are? So I wouldn't count on the fact that the things you think set you apart may not be the right things. You have to really dig into that to find out what is it that makes people choose you. If you're winning, if you're always winning that 33%, then you're really not that different. You just, people say, I could buy pencils from you. I could buy pencils from you. I could buy pencils from you. They're all the same pencils. That's the truth of most categories. Mm-hmm. And even in software, because of the number of competitors that crop up around an idea, it sounds like it's very specialized, very different. I think of all the small CRM packages designed for small businesses. How many of those are there? And at the end of the day, they all do very similar things. There's only a few that have a few differences that matter. And that's the reality. So don't count on the differences you've been counting on all along. Find out what are the differences that matter to your customers and then align yourself to that.
Yeah.
And the rest. Awesome.
Last question before we close out. What is a book that really recently, last 6 to 12 months, has impacted your life and you would like to share?
Sure. It's a book. It's a book that actually, it's a little known change in the world of healthcare that most people would not know about. But this book really highlights how it came about. And it's a guy out of Boston University Medical Center, Dr. Atul Gawande. And he wrote a book called The Checklist Manifesto.
Oh my God, I have goosebumps. I literally have it on my...
Okay, there you go. It's a
literally yesterday, I was like, have to buy that book.
Oh, it's a brilliant book. It's well written, so it's an entertaining read. It's one of those things that when you read it, you go, yeah, I know that. But then the question is, but do you do it? And he studied how all these other, and the great example he uses is airline pilots who take off and land hundreds of times a year, yet each and every time they review the checklist.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how often in sales process, in marketing, in production, people trust a mental checklist. No, you need to write it down. It's the only way to know you're not skipping a step. Analogous to when my kids were going to like high school and stuff, and they had to write papers. I'd always tell them, print it and read it out loud with a red pen. Because your brain fills in gaps when you read it silently. So you miss articles and spelling and stuff because you know what it should be. But when you read it out loud, you go, oh, that's missing the or an or whatever. And you correct it. And much better way to do it. Of course, now we have Grammarly and stuff like that. But still, it's a good habit. But the Checklist Manifesto also shows how he helped implement new safety protocols that are today standard in healthcare in terms of surgery and things like that. Amazingly, like we've all heard the story about somebody with a magic marker writing on their knee, like this knee, not that knee, because nobody was really doing that before. And you did have people replace the wrong knee. It happens, or the wrong kidney and so on. So great book for anybody doing anything meaningful it's inspiring and very helpful.
Awesome. Thank you, Jose. We're unfortunately out of time. If someone wants to get in touch with you, where would be the best way to do that?
Yeah, two very simple ways. One, you can go to our website, valueprop.com. That's valueprop.com. And there's a page there with my name, and you can get in touch with me that way. Or find me on LinkedIn. It's Jose Palomino. There's not many of them on LinkedIn. So you'll find me, and happy to connect, chat, talk, see, and sign up for our email list as well. And put out a lot of great content. And it's been a pleasure to be on the show with you, Hannah. Thank you.
Thank you.